Blog Talk Radio. Carol the Coach. Sex, love, and relationships. We talk about it here.
Carol the Coach. Compassion with contemporary relevance.
I am a psychotherapist. I can be your personal life coach, and I can help you with your issues. There are no problems too small or too big. You can talk about anything.
Speaker, columnist, radio TV host, and commentator. Carol the Coach brings messages of wellness and empowerment within reach of everyday people every day.
Almost 5 years ago, I lost my soulmate in an accident. He was killed in a plane crash. Life just for me has seemed to stop.
There are groups all over the city. I mean, I teach one. It is a specific way to start thinking so that you shift how you see the world, which then shifts your energy, and then you feel better and you actually see things differently.
Carol the Coach, always available to at carolthecoach.com.
Now I've got Russell on the line.
I'm 47 years old. I'm a truck driver. I am married. I have a wife in San Francisco.
Okay.
I haven't been home in 6 months. My thing is, I don't know if I have a sex addiction or what the problem is. Why do I want what I can't have? And as soon as I can have it, I don't want it anymore.
You're right on target when you say, I don't know if I have a sexual addiction. Well, guess what? Yes, you do. And you know what? That's my specialty, Russell. So you're at the right place. Continue.
I meet women online, and I'm in a different part of the country. I travel all 48 states, so I love sex.
I hear self-esteem issues. You never felt good enough, and you didn't feel like you were getting what you should have then, and you're reenacting that now. Do you want to change that about yourself?
We got interesting emails to talk about tonight. Hey there, I am Carol Jurgensen Sheets, known as Carol the Coach in the Indianapolis area. And you know, this is a show where you can find out all about sex addiction, coupleship, recovery, you name it, we talk about it. And this is the only place that you can make that happen. I am really excited because tonight I have Pat Love on, and she is a renowned author and speaker on couples in recovery. She presents at all the big seminars for both clinicians and for clients who want to improve their relationship, and her specialty is couples in recovery. So we're going to be talking with her tonight. She's going to help teach us the kind of support the couples need to stay healthy as they work in recovery. You know, it is not easy to navigate being a couple, but the work is harder when you've been through trauma. And the good news is that when people work in solid recovery, they actually end up being ahead of the game. You know, they are healthier than the average couple. So that's my promise to you, that if you work a program and you work on finding out the skills you need to build trust and intimacy, it will exponentially help your relationship. Now, Pat wanted to talk about couples in recovery and why it's important to get professional perspective. And she really felt like that would help you all to better your relationship. I've got a couple in distress right now. You may remember Sandy. She emailed us a while back, and she talked about her husband. And she said, you know, Carol, I contacted you in the past, and as of February of 2015, my husband disclosed part of his acting out. He divulged half-truths, full-truths, and there were omissions when I asked. We have temporarily separated since January of this year, and I have requested this temporary therapeutic separation as I don't feel emotionally safe with my husband in the house. Boy, I hear that a lot from partners. They do not feel safe. And that is an addict's responsibility to get into recovery, to develop reassurance and empathy, and to make their partners feel safe, because they destroyed that feeling of safety. I mean, that is truly the illusion of love, when you feel like you can be safe and then you realize you aren't safe at all. Now, Sandy says, I also wanted to casually date to be sure that I wasn't being short-sighted about the possibility of moving on without my husband. To be clear, I'm not interested in pursuing a relationship so soon or transferring from one relationship to another. I am honestly taking this time in therapy with friends, S&On, exploring hobbies, reading therapeutic books, usually about partners of sex addiction, trauma, and adult children of alcoholics. I love listening to your podcast, and I really thought dating would be an effort to understand who I am and what I want. Okay, now that's where I have to stop you, Sandy. You should not be dating, nor should the addict, because you are still reeling in your relationship. You really have to close out one relationship before you start another. So bless your heart. I know you're hurt. I know you're saying this is in an effort to understand who you are and what you want. But if you were my client, I'd be asking you to stop dating. As a matter of fact, I don't work with couples, and I hear that you're separated. But I don't work with people if they're dating in a relationship and they're still married. It just makes sense for closure purposes. Not only would I expect you to get a divorce if you wanted to date, then I would ask you to be single for at least a year. Sandy says, I've been diagnosed with post-traumatic stress disorder because of the events of this past year. I now know that my 20-year relationship was riddled with a highly active sex addict and an abuser of alcohol. And then she says, you know, this isn't just a guy that cheated on me once. He had multiple affairs, engaged in prostitution with women and transsexuals, went to adult bookstores, he visited porn booths, glory holes, he had phone sex, he chatted in rooms, he objectified, he used fantasy, he was flirting, he went to strip clubs, and he frequently masturbated with pornography. Okay, so this is a very active addict. And she says, as you remember, that their 20-year relationship was riddled with this kind of sexual acting out. She says, my husband is staying with his parents, but is in our family home with the children half of the weekdays, evenings, while I'm out running errands or working. He is, by his own account, sober, working an SA program, attending twice a week, and seeing a therapist. Now, that's great, although with that kind of past, if he were my client, and I'm not saying what he's not doing isn't right, but I'd be bumping that up a lot. I'd probably be asking him to go to 4 or 5 meetings a week. I'd be asking him, what step is he engaged in the 12-step process? I'd be asking him, how often is he talking to a sponsor, because that needs to be regular. And he'd be needing to make those phone calls to the fellowship on a daily basis. He has to design a new life that supports his recovery. Okay, now she says, my husband maintains that he has told me everything, but he has said that many times in the past, and I don't necessarily believe that what he's telling me is true. I recently asked again about affair partners being in our home and our bed, and he denied these things occurred as part of his acting out. However, recently he answered somewhat truthfully, enough that I know that women have been in both of our homes and engaged in sexual activity in our bed, the same bed I sleep in every night, and conceived our 5 children. I slept on the couch until I could purchase a new mattress. Well, Sandy, that is not unusual, and that is, again, an intense betrayal of your relationship. And, you know, when I have had men talk about what they've had to do to make an amends, oftentimes it is buy new bedroom furniture. Maybe it's move out of the house, both of you, so that you start anew. Maybe it's redo the room, create a new room in the house. It sounds like what you're experiencing, part of this post-traumatic stress, is the fact that he is eking out information, and at every turn, you're finding out it's not the actual truth. And so it's very hard to trust him. And I don't know. I'm hoping that he's working with a CSAT who can get him to be very, very honest. Now, we're not miracle workers. A CSAT, of course, is a certified sexual addictions therapist. We cannot make anybody be honest. But we really can work with our clients to encourage them to face their fears and to do a disclosure properly so that you get everything out at one time. So there's only one day of trauma, so that then there's a polygraph test that substantiates that the person has told the entire truth. And you can move on in your pain, your grief, your sorrow, your stress, your anxiety, and then hopefully your healing. Sandy says, you know, my husband is now willing to admit that he's holding back details of what he did. He says that because I am pushing the issue, he will tell me what I want to know. He claims he has continued to lie and omit to protect me and control the triggers I may have. And you know what, Sandy? I believe him there. I mean, there may be a part of him that doesn't want you to know because he doesn't want to be punished. He doesn't want to feel worse. He doesn't want the retribution. But I also know from the many addicts that I've worked with, they are so disappointed in themselves for having caused this pain. They cannot conceive of really 100% being honest to help you out. So I would believe him there. And I certainly think a polygraph test is needed at the end of this disclosure with a certified sexual addictions therapist. You know, when my clients go through that disclosure process, it typically takes 3, 4, 5, or 6 weeks to properly get it together. That means that they write it out, that they tell it to me, that I ask questions. It jogs their memory. They try again. I talk with the partner. I find out what questions they have. I go back to the addict. I ask them the questions that the partner has. They then remember more information. They get more accurate. I have them look at a calendar. I have them go through things that would help them to understand what they are doing. And I can't emphasize enough that a proper disclosure, although it's incredibly painful and, you know, devastating, if it's done properly, most, if not all, the information will come out. And then, like I said, after you experience the realm of feelings, you can then begin the healing. And although polygraph tests are not known to be 100% accurate, we in this business know the polygraphers who do the best job. You get to create 5 or 6 questions. You get to ask, and of course, one of those questions is always, have you been 100% honest with your wife or your husband about the acting out? And have you told her or him everything that you can consciously remember? At least then you know you're on the right track. Have I ever had an addict, come up with something else after the disclosure? Months down the road where they felt like they needed to be honest? Yes, I have. That's happened on 2 occasions in my 8 years of doing this work. And I'll tell you what, that was incredibly helpful too, because they are again learning what it takes to be honest, and that's to rebuild the trust. And that's what a couple in recovery needs. They need empathy. They need to feel safe. You know, you as a partner absolutely know you want to begin to trust your husband, or you wouldn't be hanging around waiting for this to happen. So, Sandy, I appreciate the email that you sent me. I want you to stop dating. You two are not divorced. And I want you to get with a certified sexual addictions therapist or somebody in APSATS, APSATS. Those men and women are trained in treating the partner so that you'll get the best advice that you possibly can from people who have taken the certification to know how to keep you safe and to help you recover as an individual and hopefully a couple. So thanks for writing. I will be getting back with you, and I appreciate so much the courage it took to email me because I know you've been through the ringer, as has the addict, and it's time for everybody to heal. So again tonight, we're going to be talking with Pat Love, who's a renowned author and speaker on couples and recovery. And I was excited to be talking about this because you and I both know that half of our listeners are addicts and half of our listeners are partners, and oftentimes you two listen together. So welcome to the show, Pat. Thanks for coming on and helping give hope to couples.
Well, thank you, Carol. I'm happy to be here.
Yes, you've really kind of made it your mission to help couples in recovery get healthier. And so I was wondering, what made you initially decide to take this niche on and help couples who have been through so much trauma?
You know, I think part of it, of course, comes so much but with trying to heal myself, Carol. Just trying to learn how I can recover in my life and also recover in relationship. And like many people, I came into adulthood and I had never seen a healthy love relationship. And yet somehow I thought I ought to be able to know how to create one. And we all know that falling in love is easy, but staying in love takes a lot of information, skill, knowledge, work, coaching, and learning. And so part of it was you know, my own personal growth and my own challenges in relationships. And fortunately, I've written about all of them in books, so it's not a secret to anybody with my own personal challenges. And then secondly, My clients have taught me and challenged me and driven me to get more training and more knowledge and do more research and reading and practice and get clinical skills and, like you, certification after certification beyond our degrees. And so it was seeing the need in the field and seeing couples who were struggling and wanting to provide answers for them and wanting to give them practical strategies and practical skills so that they could go home and work on themselves and work on their relationships. So, you know, I think part of it was personal. Part of it is always driven by my clients. And then part of it is just seeing the challenges in our field, which have yet to go, you know, to go met, to become those needs that aren't met. So I'm always a lot more interested in what I don't know than what I already do know. And I'm interested in to continue learning. And this is a cutting edge field. This is a cutting edge problem. I really believe it was in my office, in my clients' lives, before I knew the right questions to ask and before I even knew it was there. And in many ways, it's an issue that can sneak up on you because in some ways the secret is such a big part of the power in this area. So I think all of that came together for me, and I find it very, very rewarding that now there's so many helpful programs and support groups and materials and tapes and books and therapists who are trained now to help couples. So it's a labor of love. I guess that's the short answer.
Absolutely. And tell me, what is your most recent book?
The most recent book I wrote with a Swedish colleague and my daughter. It's called You're Tearing Us Apart, 20 Ways to Wreck a Relationship and Strategies to Fix Them. And let me tell you just a moment, because I think the whole approach behind this book is one of the keys to recovery. Because the challenge in the book was, how can I get couples to see not only their own role in recovery, but their partner's role and the role of the relationship? How do I see, how do I get people to see what we often see in two dimensions in three dimensions? Because I think as therapists and coaches, we are really trained to see the big picture, to see what the client isn't seeing. And so the challenge was, well, how do you get that in a book? So we take an issue like, you know, we address porn use, for example. We address, let's just start with criticism, because that's sort of a garden variety before we get into the area of addiction. But let's just say, you know, if you start out with criticism, you all know how painful it is to be criticized. And so we start each chapter with a narrative of what it's like living with someone who criticizes you. Or in the porn chapter, we start say what it's like living with someone who is there but not there, who doesn't have the interest and the curiosity, and who doesn't have a passion, whose sex life has changed, and there's just not the attunement and the connection, and what it's like to have a partner in your life that's changing before your very eyes and drifting away from you, and you don't really know exactly why, or that your sex life has changed drastically and you don't quite know why, or the finances, or there was more secrecy. So you know how painful it is to be on the partner side of this. But we don't stop there. We go over to the other side. And I think this is really important in recovery, that I am able to say, okay, well, why do people, what is the cause, what is the motivation behind someone who would criticize or someone who would reach out and use porn to the point that you've lost control, or you've lost time and influence, or you've lost the respect of people you love. I mean, what would cause that? And then we talk about a section that says, well, how is that a threat to the relationship? You know, and any time I take away my interest and my energy and give that which I've promised to my relationship to another area of my life, which then becomes my primary love relationship, that threatens the relationship, because relationships run on interest and energy. You know, the first sign that somebody's interested or attracted to you is they're interested, and they put energy, they tune in to you. You know, they listen to you, they engage with you, they send you texts, they send you emails. So you're getting all this energetic exchange. Well, when that goes away, it's like a fuel leak on an airplane, or your car has a fuel leak. It runs out of gas and it stops. It's broken. And so then the fourth section in each of the chapters is, how do we repair this? Well, how do you get back together? And, of course, I think this is a great outline for couples in recovery. I see, okay, what are your tasks as the addict? What are my tasks as the partner? What are our tasks in our relationship? And then how do we get this back on track so that we can love and heal, and we're no longer hurting but healing each other? So the latest book,
and I
is
am
really...
sure you've got people that can really relate to that. So that is the million-dollar question: how can we get back on track? So what are some of your ideas, your not necessarily solutions, but your techniques that help people to get back on track?
Well, couples, we know that couples that do best are in this sort of, are in this for the long haul. And even in times of crisis, if you can just say, I'll work on this a month, and I'll commit, and I'll be committed for a month or 30 days or 60 days or whatever. But in general, relationships that do best and individuals that do best are those who are committed to seeing the process of recovery through. I mean, that pretty much goes without saying. And also, I think another way we help individuals as well as couples is to understand the facts about this whole area of addiction or compulsion, whatever word you want to use, that we have to learn the facts about it, because it's very, very difficult not to take this personally, because sex and intimacy are so very personal, and they're part of the commitment that we make to one another. You know, when we commit to being in a relationship, it's about being lovers and best friends and confidants and somebody on your side, somebody in your corner, somebody, when push comes to shove, is there for you, someone to whom you're a priority, someone that protects you in the relationship. And all of this gets threatened, of course, when one or both partners is addicted. And so we have to understand, though, even though this has serious relationship consequences, it's a personal choice. It's a personal choice. And to learn that also that addiction has many, many causes, but always in the recovery is close, personal, healthy, boundary, respectful relationships. And so, you know, some people even look at addiction as a disease of intimacy, that early attachment insecurity is what sets up a lifetime of compulsivity or addiction. Some people see it that way. And so if it stands to reason that these are the skills and the lack of skills and the deficits that some of us have that cause this pain that we ease with addictive processes, it stands to reason that a big part of the healing is to learn the skills to come back together and be in healthy relationships. So people who have a strong commitment to recovery in the relationship, and also who get support from people who've been through it. I know you talk about this and how important this is. The other thing is, and this one's really tough, this idea of differentiation or objectivity. It's really difficult to know where my stuff ends and your stuff begins, and how to create safety when we're in crisis, and how to create safety skills so that when we go home, we can create a safe atmosphere for each of us to heal and recover. So couples have to really learn skills for regulating their own emotions as well as creating safety in the relationship. So that's extremely important. I mean, one of the first things we do with couples and individuals is say, okay, where do you get your support? What's your recovery going to look like? Who's going to be a part of your support group? How are you going to create? How are you going to soothe yourself? How are you going to calm yourself? How are you going to cheer yourself up and calm yourself down in times of stress? And so we start teaching these skills, not only for me to regulate my own emotions, but to create a safe way to relate to my partner, even in times of crisis, So I think a big part of it is individual support and recovery for the partners, but building safety and building healthy boundaries with the couple, having a plan for recovery, and knowing the difference between your work and my work and our work. You know, we call it the three-legged stool, because the partner has the tasks, the addict has tasks, but the couple has tasks. And this is the primary relationship. And if you're in a committed love relationship, your relationship is part of the hurt, but also part of the healing. So
would
we
you
want
give
to make...
us an example of that three-legged stool? What would that stool be like? You said the partner has some responsibility, the addict has some responsibility. So share a little bit about what that might look like.
Okay. Well, first of all, we've probably talked a lot about, you know, the addict is got a breakthrough denial, first of all. You have to, first of all, be honest with yourself, And this is an individual process, by the way. I heard you mentioning disclosure and how how that has to be handled in such a professional way. And when it's handled well, it can be such a major healing experience. And it has to be handled really well. And the way to begin to even think about disclosing is to break through your own denial. So the addict has major tasks like breaking through denial, understanding the nature of where do you draw the line between healthy and unhealthy behavior. You know, there's healthy sexual behavior, and then there's sexual behavior that exemplifies a loss of control. You know, you tried to cut back and you haven't, and you promised yourself you'd quit and you didn't. You know, that loss of control, also loss of time, that when you're not acting out, you're thinking of acting out, that it starts to replace all the important other tasks in your life, like home and work and school and commitment and family and friends. So it's a loss of time, and then it's a loss of respect from the people that you love and the people that love you. You know, that loss of respect is a very, very big part of this, and loss of important relationships. And you have to break through the denial about that and understand the nature of addiction. And then you start to get into recovery around these patterns. And you have to really get in a program of recovery and treatment, by the way. And part of that is just limiting damage, changing behavior, following guidelines that lead to sobriety. We've talked about this a lot. And also knowing your own particular patterns, knowing your own patterns, and get in a culture of support. I mean, the good thing about this is once you come out of denial and start getting into recovery, there is so much support for you out there. Well, on the same as the addict, in the same token. You know, the partner is just reeling from the usually either a partial disclosure or discovery or a major change in the relationship. And so oftentimes the partner's work starts with a crisis. And the partner has to understand the nature of post-traumatic stress. I mean, and why is it like post-trauma? You know, why is it a trauma? I think what we don't often recognize is that as human beings, the primary love relationship, as well as our closest friendships and family relationships, are part of our survival. You know, as human beings, we're not necessarily the smartest species. We're not necessarily the strongest species or the fastest species. But what we do, we have a big brain and we help each other. And this helping each other really means that by gathering together and supporting one another, we're able to survive. Well, when that gets threatened, that is a trauma, because the definition of trauma is a real or perceived threat to survival. And so when your partner has moved away and shifted her or his focus away from you and your relationship to another primary interest, you know, another experience, another process, another, you know, substance has your partner's primary interest and it's a priority, that makes you feel like you're going to die. And that creates post-traumatic stress. Call it what you want, but there's a crisis going on, and at times it feels like you're going to die. It really does. And so to deal with the emotional aftershock of all of this is best done with support. And I just don't think, Carol, there's any substitute for the support of people who've been through it. I mean, they know what works, what doesn't work, and they have an empathy that is so heartfelt and from their own experience. And fortunately, there are trained professionals now, and there's so many good people out there to help nowadays. I mean, it's just so many good people to help that I'm just encouraged by how much help there is out there for individuals. So you've got to deal with that aftershock, get support, and then you start to understand the difference between my stuff, my partner's stuff, and then our stuff. So then, you know, so there are three separate processes going on here. And then if you look at focusing, if say if you're the partner, if I'm focusing on my own work, not my partner's work, just think how freeing that can be for both of us. And it doesn't mean I harden my heart. It doesn't mean that I pull away necessarily. It means that during this time, I'm responsible for my own recovery and not my partner's. Then we have that third leg. So we got the partner track, we got the addict track, and then we've got that couples track, okay? And then we have the healthy boundaries. Go ahead. I've been talking. I don't mean to just, be a monologue here.
No, you're answering the question exactly as I asked it. So continue.
Oh, good. Okay, good. Because I think the healthy boundaries of the couple, I just can't say enough. You know, somebody asked me a definition of differentiation, and I said it's the fact that I can love and still like all my friends who hold a very, very different political viewpoint than I do. In this election season, I can disagree, they can disagree with me, we can see life from very, very different points of view, but we honor the connection and the history and the love and the friendship that is between us. And that's what mature people do. And that's a big part of recovery, that we don't want this relationship to die while we're doing our individual work. We don't want recovery to come between us as a couple. And couples who are committed to recovery, there is such a high percentage of these couples that go on to be stronger than ever before because, one, they develop these healthy boundaries, and they understand what attachment and truly being there for each other means. And let me just give you, because we talk a lot about attachment or attunement, let me give you just four practical steps of how you know somebody is securely attached to you and you're securely attached. What do we mean by secure attachment? Well, somebody who, number one, they show up for you. They show up when you need them, not just when things are going well, but during the difficult times as well as the good times, who will say, listen, I'm in this. I know we got to make it better, but I'm in it, and I'm in it for the long haul, and I'm going to be here. And as long as I see progress, and as long as you say you're committed to this recovery, I've got your back, you've got my back, and we're going to be in this, and we're going to be fighting for this relationship, and we're going to be working on our own recovery, and we're going to be taking care of this relationship. So number one, you got to show up. You got to show up. And it doesn't mean you have to love it, like it, or embrace it, but you got to show up. You got to stay in the game. Number two, and that doesn't mean, with abuse or neglect or extreme circumstances. I hope you know that that goes without saying.
Oh,
number
absolutely.
Two,
I'm thinking of the addict who is in good recovery and the partner is still very traumatized. And one of the things I teach the addict is to, she starts getting hypervigilant, going, what are you looking at? What's going on? That person is to reassure and show up and maybe have a tagline that they really mean, something like, I've got this, which reassures the partner and also reinforces their commitment to recovery. So I love this. They have to show up. What is number two?
Number two is, when you're there, you have to tune in, because there are the pain of addiction is you're there but not there. Sometimes you're physically there, but your brain is obsessing about the addiction. Or if you're the partner, you're obsessing about when the addict's going to act out. So So you're there, but you're not there. So attunement means, you know, it's more than hearing. You know, we're always hearing. We don't have ear lids. So you never are not hearing. You're always hearing.
Right.
But listening means that listening means your brain perceives meaning. And that's a very different experience than hearing. Hearing is random. You're just hearing all the things and you're not, they don't have meaning. Most of them don't have meaning, but when something does have meaning, all of a sudden you're tuned in. And that's what we're talking about, that when you're with your partner in meaningful times, you tune in. You know, that you let them know, I'm really here. It's not just my body. I'm not just hearing you. I'm really listening. I'm attuned. And so so you tune in to each other. Then number three, here's the third step. You tune in long enough to understand one another. In other words, just that example you gave, when the partner gets hypervigilant or starts micromanaging and the addict says, I got this. Or, you know, a line I often say is, if you tune in long enough to understand someone and you say, oh, you know what, his anxiety's up or her anxiety's up. So what do you want to do about that anxiety? Well, I want to help that anxiety. So I would say, how can I help? Talk about magic words. How can I help? What's one small thing in this moment I can do to be helpful? Honey, how can I help? How can I help? And I often say, with that understanding, you might even want to soften your voice. You might want to look with soft eyes. And you say, how can I help? What's one small thing I can do in this moment that would be helpful? And so you just stay present. So you show up, you tune in, and you tune in long enough to understand somebody. So it's not just that you're listening. You're listening for meaning so that you understand the person. In couples training, we give them a simple little exercise, and it's called RU2. R means repeat or reflect, which always shows you're listening. If you can sort of reflect it back to your partner, the words back. But what people really want is the U, and the U is understanding. Oh, okay, I understand what you're saying now, because you're really anxious because I was supposed to be home, and when I came in late, it was just like maybe like old times. Oh, okay. So you really show understanding, because showing up is one thing. Tuning is another thing. But if you don't truly tune in long enough to understand someone, they don't feel connected or valued by you. Then the fourth step is your behavior proves that you understand. And that's where you start to build trust. And I say there are three steps to building trust. A, number one, say what you're going to do. Number two, do it. Number three, repeat steps one and two. So it's that simple. And so this is, you know, when I talk about attachment or building attachment, these skills show, you know, start with showing up, tuning in, understanding one another, and then showing that you understand. And then that starts to build that bridge that I talked about between two people who are in very different realities, who may have disagreed with each other, may have hurt each other, may hold such different worldviews and et cetera, but you got to build that bridge, and attachment starts to build the bridge. Then you have to also have a way to establish safety. And you know, couples do it different ways. We teach them the RU2 exercise. It's just a way of talking in an organized way so that each person gets to be heard and understood. Also, there are personal safety strategies such as calling time or limiting discussions, you know, having a formal disclosure and using professionals in disclosure. And these tasks start to build on themselves. And it's almost like assembling an airplane in flight. There are a lot of recovery tasks going on at one time. We have found that when you are working with the couple, as well as the individual doing their work, recovery actually runs more smoothly and can actually be shortened. So that really is a very hopeful sign for individuals as well as couples. And by the way, this is not to say you have to be in a committed love relationship to recover. I hope in no way anyone's hearing that, because close friends are part of your attachment circle, and people that we always have to have people that are supporting us in our recovery and in our healthy living practices and changing these behaviors in our lives. We've got to have what my friend Ed Jacobs calls a board of directors. He's written about this. You always need a good board of directors, people that are objective and are on your side and can support you and be confidential so that you can be accountable to these people. So it doesn't have to be a primary love partner, so to speak. That's a long answer.
Absolutely. Let me just go over this one more time. You said that clearly if you're working on forming attachments and being the partner, whether you're the addict or his or her spouse, what mm-hmm. you need to do is you have to show up. And you do that by being present. And then, two, you have to tune in. You have to listen. And what did you say? Your brain perceives meaning when you're really looking at listening. It's not just that reflective listening. It's that it actualizes a sense of meaning so that the person feels understood. And then the third part is you ask, how can I help? How can I help you feel better?
Once you understand what's going on with your partner, it's not just enough to understand, because I say, what understanding is, your behavior has to be congruent with the understanding. That's step four. Let me just give you a semantics that are helpful in this. Empathy is simply feeling what the other person feels. Empathy, in a way, has been highly overrated and in some ways misunderstood, because if I know how, empathy is a function of mirror neurons. In a way, it's sort of a no-brainer. I feel, you get sad, I feel sad. You yawn, I yawn. You you drink a glass of water, I get thirsty, So we're gonna mirror each other and feel what the other person is feeling. But if I know what you're feeling, I can use that knowledge even against you. Couples do this too. Individuals, friends do it. Coworkers do it. They use that against you. So we have to go a step beyond empathy to compassion. And that's really what that fourth step is. When I say your behavior has to be congruent with your understanding of one another, because if I see that you're anxious, if I understand that you're hurt, then compassion, the definition of compassion, is the desire to ease suffering. And that's very different. That's the difference of being on the hurting team or the healing team. The way you're on the healing team is you have a desire to heal the suffering. And especially if I've been the cause of the suffering, I can heal it. And that's why I love that line, honey, how can I help? What's one thing in this moment I can do? What's another thing I could do? What's another thing I can do? And be willing to listen and hear that. So that process, we often talk about these concepts of attachment or communication, but I always want to break it down into practical steps so that when an individual or couple leaves my office or leaves a meeting, they know what to do outside the meeting. And that is understanding the difference between hearing and listening, and understanding the importance of truly focusing and tuning into your partner and tuning in long enough to understand someone. If you don't understand someone, then you have to tune, you have to listen more. You have to ask more questions. Help me understand, you know, give me more information. Or again, tell me how I can help, or tell me, you know, how I can be closer to you, or how I can be supportive to you. We can always ask those helpful questions. And then our behavior, though, has to show that we are retaining this information. We have to show that. And that's how you build trust. That's exactly how you build trust. And if you want to make a change, it's easier to add positives than eliminate negatives. We can't go back and rewrite that history, but we sure can change history right now in this moment. That's why I like that question. What's one small thing I can do in this moment that would start, that would help or be helpful or show respect to you, or say I'm trying a different path? I mean, you know, so we can change. If you want to make a change, it's easier to move towards something. And what are we moving toward? We're moving toward safety. We're moving toward healthy boundaries, knowing what's my stuff, what's your stuff, and what's our stuff. We're moving toward, you know, intimate communication, and ultimately toward building or rebuilding a healthy sex and intimacy life together.
Yes, and what books do you recommend to create a healthier sexual life? Certainly, some clients are afraid to take on that next chapter. They feel so betrayed, but they're really ready. They have developed the safety. They have developed the healthy boundaries, and they have really worked on their communication. You know, I love Bill and Ginger Burkhoff's books because they really spell out very exercises. But what would you recommend?
You know, a lot of people are gaining daily from Alex Katahakis' daily meditations, you know, her meditation book, which is just wonderful. People, couples are. And also Erotic Intelligence that she wrote is extremely helpful. And, you know, but there are stages, you know, there are different readings, of course, for different stages. And there's so many good, you know, Stephanie Karn's book for, you know, Mending a Shattered Heart is just wonderful for partners, and all of Patrick Karn's work. And there's so many good materials for the individuals in recovery. And depending upon the stage, you almost have to design the book for the stage. If you're in crisis, you're going to read something different. You know, you're probably going to
I said you're a renowned author. And how many books have you written?
6 books, but who's counting, right?
And go, let's go over books. Them for our listeners.
You know, the
so
very
loving
first
what
book
you have
I
to
ever
say.
Wrote.
Look at Amazon.
The first book
website.
Yeah. Yes. Yes. But the first book, and a lot of couples in recovery have found this book helpful, and I still get more calls about this book, is The Emotional Incest Syndrome, What to Do When a Parent's Love Rules Your Life. That book is about enmeshment and a lack of healthy boundaries, and half of the book is all about creating healthy boundaries in the family. And that was the very first book I wrote. And then I wrote Hot Monogamy, by the way, which is a great book when couples are in the third stage of recovery, when they're past the crisis, you know, and they've stabilized their relationship. That is a great book for creating a healthy love relationship. Couples use it as a workbook. They go through it together. It has a sexual style survey where you really learn about yourself and your partner sexually and sensually and intimately. And then I wrote The Truth About Love, and that really helps you understand the addictive nature of falling in love and how this whole love addiction can happen. So The Truth About Love is a powerful book just for creating healthy love relationships in intimate relationships. Then the next one was called How to Improve Your Marriage Without Talking About It. And this book has really sold a lot of copies because it teaches you to differentiate about gender styles, how most women, not all, differ from most men, not all. We're not all alike. And I often say, you're going to be in trouble if you expect a man to act like a woman, or even a woman to act like a woman, or another man to act like another man. I mean, we all have differences. And it talks about the power of shame and the power of a fear of abandonment. The book is, we get so many good reviews on how to improve your marriage without talking about it, because it really does make a practical case, a good case for understanding how different you and your partner truly are, and not to be alarmed but engaged by the difference. Then the next one is Never Be Lonely Again, and that really is probably the best personal growth book I've ever written, and it's all about core values. And you and I could do a whole show, Carol, on core values and core value living, because with addiction and also with over-functioning, when you've been with a person who's addicted or you're over-involved, you have to realize ultimately the question is, what kind of man you want to be? What kind of woman do you want to be? And what I often say is, don't let your partner decide how you're going to act or what kind of person you're going to be. And when people say, well, why should I be nice to her when she's not nice? I say, you know why? Because you feel better about yourself when you do the right thing. And this book
Absolutely.
Is all about, yes.
How maturity, be
value.
The change you want to
yes.
see in the world. Come on.
Yes.
Do it right.
Yes.
And eventually,
yes.
hopefully your partner will catch on to it, because it diffuses conflict and anxiety, and it builds the
it
trust.
It does.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
That last week,
so that's on
you
core values.
Yes.
Interesting
yes.
that you said that, Pat, because I am a mental health therapist of 35 years, but I've also been a coach, both a life and executive coach for 10. And that's where we start. We start with core values, because that's a great guide to get you where you want to be.
I think it's the most powerful leverage we have as coaches and therapists, and also in our own daily lives. Because all of the strongest feelings that we feel are designed to take us back to our core values. And if we, you know, when I said earlier, if you want to make a change, it's easier to add positives than eliminate negatives. When you feel fear, when you feel shame, when you feel anger, say, what would a kind person do? What would a loving person do? What would a man of integrity do? Always design yourself for your strongest feelings to take you back to your core values. And that's core value living. And that's recovery.
And I got to tell you, and our listening audience, that I've heard Pat several different times, certainly at the ITAP workshops. And when she's talking to us about our clients, each and every one of us can practice these same techniques. And so I love the work you do, because it's true and authentic for any person, no matter what stage in their relationship that they are with themselves, in their relationships. You make it so simple. And I kind of credit myself with this too. I love speaking in bullets and formulas, because it's something a client can remember and they can go, okay, now, did I say what I was going to do? Did I do it? And am I repeating it now? And that's an easy formula as a balance, a checks and balance system.
Yes, yes. I like that too. You know, give me a PowerPoint for my brain, and I can do better. I can live better.
Absolutely. Now, as we are starting to wrap up, what would you tell couples in recovery, what would you say to them in terms of, you know, the hope, strength, and recovery that they're working towards?
You are stepping into a healthy river that's moving in the right direction. Just the flow is full of people on this same journey, and we're all there to help. And there are so many resources for you that you can join us. I mean, when you step into the pain, you're feeling the pain of so many people around the world who are moving and transforming this pain in really into triumph. I mean, I'm so encouraged when I get together with professionals working in this area, Carol, because there's so many more resources. They're just coming out monthly now because the issue is so common, so big, and now it's just fueled, of course, by the internet. And so you're not alone. There's help for you. And there's not just help. There's great help. And in many ways, your relationships can be stronger and more rewarding than they've ever been through the process of renewal. So I'm really optimistic, and I share that optimism with people who've been through it, been through the process, and who are there to help.
Well, I agree with that. Can you give us your website and how we can get your books?
You bet. And they're one and the same, and it's so easy. It's just patlove.com, P-A-T-L-O-V-E, patlove.com. It's really easy. And you can get my books from the website, and we'll be happy to have you visit and stay in touch with us.
Oh, I love that. Pat, you know, I have been trying to get you on the show for almost a year because I knew that you would speak so eloquently to our listeners. We have listeners that are addicts, partners, couples, and clinicians. So thank you so much for sharing your time and wisdom with us tonight.
Well, thank you for what you do. I know how important this is, and bless you for it. And thank you for your patience.
Absolutely. I love it. And sometime we're going to have to talk about core values.
I know.
I'll catch you in about nine more minutes, okay?
That's right. Thank you. Uh-huh. Bye-bye.
All right. You take care. And again, for anybody listening, again, her website is patlove.com, just exactly as it sounds, patlove.com. Doesn't get any easier than that. And, you know, this is a woman who has made it her mission to help couples all over the world. And she does all sorts of conferences, workshops, for clinicians and for couples alike, and I really appreciate the work she does. So, I hope you enjoyed the show, as usual. You know I did. And next week, we're going to be talking with Bill Herring, who's going to be talking about honesty and how to kind of face your fears and get honest with your partners and with yourself. Can't wait to hear what he has to say. He's a fellow CSAT. He's also taking the APSETS training with me, and we're getting our certification together. And, you know, that's part of the exciting work of what I do, is that I get to work with just amazing people, and we get to learn together, just like you and I are doing tonight. So, listen, as I say at the end of every show, you know, there will only be one of you at all times, so I fearlessly want you to have the courage to be yourself. And if you will, for tonight, for the rest of the week, and hopefully for your life, follow Pat's instructions and really take your life to the next level by examining your core values and looking at what would it take to make your partner feel safe, and how can you do that? All right, you have a great week, and we'll see you next Monday night at 9 o'clock, 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, for more sex help with Carol the Coach. Have a great week.